Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Hey, I said it yesterday about Kevin Harlan. His ability to make that Seattle-Philadelphia Monday night game sound thrilling. Credit to Brian Haney. Listening to those highlights, you would have no idea what a brick fest that game was last night. My word. Hey, it's one of the things that maybe we like about college basketball around here. The imperfection of it. Maybe one of the reasons people around here don't seem to embrace the NBA as much probably is mostly just family traditions passed down for a long time of caring about your local college basketball team a lot, honestly, more than anything. But sometimes in the NBA, it can look so easy because everybody can play. Everybody can shoot. Anymore.
That's the first thing you notice if you go see that game live in person, because NBA game live in person is much different.
It's much different.
And just like any live sport, right?
Yeah.
It's a different experience. And when you see an NBA game, if you haven't had the chance live in person, it's breathtaking. These athletes and how good they are. They make it look so simple.
Every pass is on time and on target.
Yeah.
The defense is amazing, but if you get an open shot in the NBA,
done.
It's going in most of the time. Last night, that was not the case, as that was a brick fest, man. Kentucky went 3-for-21 from beyond the arc. That's 14%. The Jayhawks hit a couple of big threes late. Ochai Agbaji got a couple. Wilson got a couple. And they ended up going 5 of 21 for 24% from beyond the arc, which basically is the difference in the game. But KU won, and they won over Kentucky. The Battle of the Blue Bloods, as you heard from Brian Haney there. I think both of these teams, if they played later in the year, would be a lot better. We know that about most Kentucky teams. Cal gets a bunch of freshmen that are ridiculously talented. At the beginning of the year, they struggle. And then as the season goes on, they get a little bit better and a little bit better. And then by the time the tournament rolls around, they're a dangerous team. So that might happen. And both these teams are looking for new players to emerge. You know, they both lost their best players from last year. So maybe that is one of the things we like about it, watching the progression, watching a team struggle, grow, watching the players grow, because that was not like an advertisement for the sport of basketball last night. It just wasn't. That was an ugly game. But KU won, and you got to give them credit, too, because I think they were stuck on 5 points forever, and they fell behind by double digits. And they fought back and they won the game. Kentucky was stuck on scoring 5 points in the second half forever, it seemed like. So congratulations to Kansas. They get a 65-62 win over Kentucky. We'll talk about that on the show today. We have another busy show today as we continue to reintegrate Stephen St. John into the show. He'll join us a couple of different times again today. Right in an hour from now, he'll join us. At 7:30, Adam Kaplan. Boy, we'll do the latest on the Ravens and Steelers and what's going to happen this afternoon at 2:40, if anything, and all the other stuff going on in the NFL. Gary Lezak will give us a weather forecast at 7:50. Matt Beisler, who is not available for the playoff game tomorrow night, he's dealing with a concussion, Peter Vermees revealed on Monday, but he is alert and able enough to talk to us on the Border Patrol. We'll talk about Sporting KC's game that got moved. It was supposed to be tonight, and now it's going to be tomorrow night because the NFL doesn't have a game tomorrow night, and so they're putting Sporting Kansas City versus Minnesota United on Big Fox on the network to make up for the missed NFL game. So we'll talk with Matt about all that and about Sporting Kansas City's chances to advance to the final. Yep, soccer siren. If Sporting wins tomorrow night, they go to the Western Conference Finals. Well, they will finals where they will play the Seattle Sounders, who seem to be everybody's favorite, I think, in this MLS playoff. They won MLS Cup last year. They're the 2 seed in the West. They'll be very quick to point out to you they never played Sporting Kansas City in the regular season. So Sporting have a chance to prove they earned the 1 seed, but they got to beat Minnesota, which is going to be a tough game, and then they get a chance against Seattle if they do that. At 8:30, Greg Gurley, who was on the call with Brian Haney last night to talk about the Champions Classic, KU versus Kentucky. At 9 o'clock, Nick Leckie to talk K-State football and Chiefs football and other NFL things and maybe food, maybe music. You never know with Nick Leckie. And Steven will rejoin us again at about 9:30 or so. We've got Todd Lebo with us to start off the show today. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm just excited. I just shot the 3 3-pointers and missed them all here at the start of the show. It's
break any windows?
Get that done. Oh, my gosh. College basketball is going to be pretty ugly for a while, I think, this year especially. They haven't had regular practices, and there are so many new players, especially on those two teams we watched last night. Now, you know, Gonzaga, if you watched that on Thanksgiving, that team brought a lot of guys back. That's a different deal, I think, maybe. But Kansas, you know, most experienced best two players who they kind of depended on all last year aren't on the team anymore, and they just haven't played all that much or practiced that much. And Kentucky, you know, at the end of the game last night, you know, we'll have probably in January or February some knockdown dragouts on whether or not you're supposed to foul when you're up 3. But there was no reason to foul Kentucky last night. They had a much better chance of making a free throw, missing a free throw, and getting a rebound over you and scoring to tie it up than to make a, as they Brian Haney described it, a fadeaway 3 to try to tie the game. But, yeah, it's Kentucky looks like a pretty amazing athletic team. But that's a nice gutty win for Kansas last night. It's pretty good for them to go get that one because I know they certainly didn't want to lose that game to Gonzaga, but it'll get a little easier for a while for them. They got Washburn. The Ichabods probably aren't going to provide much of a challenge tomorrow night.
The Bods might not. Is Brett Ballard still coaching Washburn? Let's see here. I like Nate fires off with a question. Yes, Brett Ballard is an American college men's basketball coach, currently coaching Washburn University. Brett Ballard, a good dude.
Saturday they play North Dakota State. It's usually a pretty salty team from up there. And did you see the timing on those? They're playing football. This is the only stuff that like we care about because we carry the Jayhawks Network. And we're like, oh, pregame show, postgame show, all that. They're going to play football at 3 and or 11 and basketball at 3. So it's just going to be like this seamless whatever. And so there won't be pre
ESPN
as much or post
says
as much.
ESPN says North Dakota State TBD.
Yeah, it's 3 o'clock now. That's
3
been
o'clock.
Officially
okay.
Done
it has been
by
D.
The Jayhawk Network. Yeah, it's been
HBD D. Has it's been determined.
It has been did. And it's at 3. So yeah, they're going to have we have a long stretch of Kansas Network for you on Saturday starting at 9:30 till whenever. And it'll be up to them to figure out who's talking and when.
Home of the Jayhawks.
There it is, all day Saturday. Whether you need it all or not. But the good news is that there won't be a very long postgame show for football. So,
well, that probably is good news. To be honest with you, but hey, for Kansas, a couple of observations in the game. Now, obviously, the number one thing is just that the poor shooting on both sides, and thankfully for KU, Kentucky missed just everything. That was Brick City from Kentucky. They were a horrible shooting team. Kansas did not shoot it well from outside. They had some open looks, but I actually give a lot of their poor shooting. I give credit to Kentucky's defense. That's another
12 blocks.
Another long athletic team. Kansas realized they weren't hitting shots early, so they tried to go to the basket. And when they went to the basket, they either got their shots blocked or altered and made it very difficult to score around the basket. I can't remember what the stat was. At one point in time last night, Kansas was something like 1 for 9 from around the basket, you know, from what they call layups. But as we know, layups are not all created equal. Just because you're 1 foot from the basket doesn't mean that you have the same shot as a guy wide open putting it off the glass versus a guy trying to shoot over a 6'9", rangy athlete that can block your shot. And I give a lot of credit to Kentucky for that. They play some good defense. I thought it was funny when Cal at halftime, who, by the way, is the best halftime interview of any coach in America, and he said, you would think with all the athletes I got that offense wouldn't be the problem. You'd think that I'd have to work on the defensive part. But for him right now, they actually played pretty good defense. I mean, they had some breakdowns here and there, but they played pretty good defense. They couldn't shoot. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. And that was to KU's advantage because that allowed them to stay in the game when they couldn't score. Then they finally found a hot hand in Jalen Wilson, who scored 23 points, and 21 of them came in the second half. He's a redshirt freshman at Denton, Texas, and he was, you know, with that 6'8 body, I mean, he was able to get to the basket and score where other guys couldn't, maybe over some of that length of Kentucky. He, to his credit, was aggressive. I mean, he was feeling it. He wanted to score and take the ball to the basket.
He's the kid who missed all of last year when he broke his ankle so early.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I remember, you know, about every week on Bill Self's conference calls, what's going on with Jalen? What's going on with Jalen? He broke his ankle and eventually ended up redshirting, but he looks like a pretty good athlete. That was a very nice night for him last night.
Yeah, he went for 23 and 10. And like I said, 21 of those points came in the second half. There was a stretch there where it seemed like this is the only guy that's going to score for KU this half. Ochai Agbaji ended up hitting a couple of threes late in the second half. And in the words of Neil Smith, that is what made him excellent. But he ended up with 17 points. But, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things for KU. We talked before the season about, okay, who's going to be the leading scorer? And who's going to be the guy that you want the ball in his hands in a close game? And I think Bill Self said, look, it's not going to be like last year. Devon Dotson's going to drive things. And if you can get the ball inside to Doak, you get it inside to Doak. This year, there's probably going to be like this where last game, Christian Brown went for 30 points. This time, he only had 8. Jalen Wilson goes for 23 this time. What are you laughing at, Jake?
No, he had a sweet backdoor dunk in a tech, too.
What? All right.
Sorry, that happened. That
was is it bad that I kind of like the fact that he's talking trash out there?
I loved it.
First of all, is that a tech? What he did?
By the letter of the law, yeah. I mean, I'm not a professional lip reader.
Right.
But
rip leader. You are the rip leader.
I am the rip leader for sure.
You know what? Good day. Woo! I am the rip leader. I lost train of thought being the rip leader.
What did Christian Brown say?
It looked like the female dog might have been in inside him.
Yeah, I guess that'll get you tech.
Looking right at him.
Call somebody
a female dog.
The B word.
Right.
That'll get you tech.
Yeah, I mean,
I
said, I wasn't there. I just that was my amateur rip leading lip reading ability. So whatever.
I
don't want to see that in a Final Four game if it's close.
KU overcame 2 techs.
He's gonna learn his lesson. Coach should probably take him and run some lines. But we don't do that.
Self going to make himself run some lines? He got a tech, too.
Nah, you don't do that when you're the coach.
Nah.
It is going to be interesting, man, with no fans in a lot of these games. Now, there'll be fans that K-State just announced yesterday they'll have like 15% or something. But these games at these neutral site ones, man, it's crazy. You can hear a lot
it's weird
of
looking.
Stuff. And they're working on it. They're working on trying to, you know, work the mics to where you're not exactly hearing everything that's
right.
happening. It also helped in that one last night that the announcers weren't there. Because sometimes, you know, if you're over there near the headsets, you hear that. I mean, unless someone was going to walk in Dickie V's basement and say something, then you weren't going to hear it on that part of it. How weird was the Cameron indoor setup? You know, because they're used to seats everywhere.
So
and
weird.
And it's a little gym that has the pushback seats. You know, it's the same thing in Allen Field. They can push those bleachers back.
Yep.
You know, and they had the whole thing. It was just like, where are they? What does this thing look like? But it's going to be pretty trippy to watch some of these deals.
I thought it's crazy watching those guys do the games from home now. And it's been going on. I mean, shoot, since they were doing the Korean baseball stuff, guys were doing it from their houses. And I got my first
back
crack at that with that, you know, decision day game we did for Sporting Kansas City. And It's interesting, man, and you're going to see more and more of that. I mean, I think some of these things that have changed in the COVID world are going to change forever.
They've been talking about that for a while, though.
I remember, absolutely.
Yeah,
I remember, gosh, probably 5 years ago, there was, a couple of midweek Big 12 games. I mean, it was like maybe K-State, Iowa State. A few years ago, they're like, oh, these guys are in Pittsburgh or wherever they were doing the game. And, you know, there's a lot of people there. The cameramen are there and the truck is there and they're directing it from there. But a lot of that stuff's even changed now. If these companies could save some money by not sending, you know, Dick Vitale to Chicago or Indianapolis or wherever for two nights and paying for his food and hanging out and all that stuff and just have him sit there and do it from home, it will absolutely do it. These are the things that we're sportscaster people. Whatever. If you're watching on TV, it doesn't matter, man.
I don't know that your experience as a fan is any worse watching that game last night.
I wasn't listening. I honestly.
It's harder to call.
It's a harder job for the people
I turned
to call.
The TV off. I'll be honest with you.
You turned the TV off?
Not
the volume.
The volume.
Ah, I got you.
The audio. I can't watch games with Dick Vitale anymore. I love Dickie V. He is college basketball. I can't do it, man. I can't, and I feel horrible.
All Jake needs is to read the lips. Lips the reeds? Rip the leads.
Rip leader. I just need to be the rip leader.
Yeah.
So I can't. I took about 3 minutes of it, and I said, nope, done. So
I got a couple of text messages.
Gurley told us last week they were going to do the games down in Florida from the 20th row. I'd be interested to see where they were last night. If they were up there a little bit, and I don't know exactly what their setup is going to be at the field house on Thursday, because there are going to be some fans, right?
Oh boy, I haven't seen the latest.
They were supposed to reassess yesterday, right? December 1.
K-State is allowing fans this week, so different counties, different cities, different counties. Probably should have done. I did a Nate. I just asked you a question.
It's okay.
I don't know the answer.
I don't have a problem.
But I know
that
December 1st was they were going to reassess the situation, right? They said no fans until the end of November.
Usually I get an email on that, and I don't remember seeing it. They're probably assessing it still. Yeah. They're going to wait till the last minute, maybe to see what they can do.
Maybe Gurley will have some news on that at 8:30 when he joins the show.
Yeah, I don't see anything on the KU Athletics website, and you'd think that would be one of the top things on the list there. But KU got a win, 65-62. Jalen Wilson was the star in this one, and David McCormick went 1-for-9 from the field. And there was a lot of talk about how important he was going to be to step in and fill the shoes of Doak as much as he could. He's not going to be the same as Doak, but you're hoping for more than 1-for-9 from the field, 7 points and 5 rebounds from your one low post guy, but there's going to be that's going to be an interesting thing to watch through the course of this year. We'll take a break. More with Todd Lebo right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. The Border Patrol continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Buchady with you in studio. Todd Lebo in his Lee's Summit residence. And we got a little Tyreek Hill talking to who was it, NFL Network yesterday?
Inside the
NFL yesterday. He had some interesting things to say about his first impressions of Patrick Mahomes.
Tyreek, I want to ask you this. When you were in training camp and y'all drafted Patrick Mahomes, what was your thought after you watched him that first week in training camp?
I thought it was trash. I ain't gonna cap. I ain't even gonna cap, man. When he first got there, I was like, then who y'all drafted right here? Then who y'all drafted? He proved me into a whole complete, I don't know, like it's just that second year, like his quarterback mechanics were different. It was like he was spending more time with his quarterback coach, spending more time with Coach Reed, like learning the offense. It was like, dude, it was like different.
Big Cheetah, you got to tell Phil what no cap means and cap mean. He's old, man. He don't know what that means. Explain to him what cap and no cap means.
Hey, Phil, look, I ain't got time to explain to you what all that
That's
means.
Okay.
Man.
Hey, I got it.
All our terminology means.
Don't worry, I got it.
He thought that Patrick Mahomes was trash. You know what? The first day I went to rookie mini camp and watched Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
He was trash that day. He was.
I remember
and,
you telling me.
And everybody was like, you know, Steven got pretty mad at me. It was his first time. I'm like, look, I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I'm just telling you, he was garbage today.
And I remember that you and Steven went out to that practice. I remember the next day, and you were, hey, I'm going to tell you what I saw. I'm going to be a little critical. And I was like, I would still start him tomorrow over Alex Smith. So, I don't know.
I don't know if Tyreek Hill's talking about, like, because he said it wasn't until the second year that he came back and looked different with his mechanics and all that
stuff.
Well,
he asked a question about the first time he saw him in camp, and he said that, but I think he impressed some people as the season went along.
Yeah.
But honestly, Tyreek Hill might not have been watching much of that because he was more of a starter and not, like, watching what was happening with the scout team. You know, when these guys are at practice, they're not sitting there staring at every second of it. You know, interesting, you bring these guys back, like, the first time Patrick Mahomes ever played in college was, you know, midway through 2014 at Texas Tech, and they happened to be playing Oklahoma State. And that's where – that was the you know, the year that Tyreek Hill played for Oklahoma State. And I remember in one of those – maybe it was the Gruden quarterback camp thing. Like one of his first passes was this really horrible, don't throw this, what are you doing, pass. It turned into like a pick six or an interception or something. So maybe Tyreek Hill was still thinking, oh, this is the guy who did that in that game who came off the bench. And he ended up throwing a touchdown later in the game. But his first game in college, Davis Webb started, but, you know, threw for 300 and some yards and then got hurt. But Mahomes came in and just kind of flipped the ball backwards or something and got an interception. I remember seeing that on there. So it's pretty funny how these guys have, you know, their paths crossed way back then, and then they kind of got together again throughout, and now they're as good a combination as there is in the league. It's pretty funny.
So that rookie, the first practice that I saw of Mahomes, the one we're talking about that Steven and I went to, I think was the first actual team activity type practice that Mahomes was a part of, and it was rookie minicamp. So if people don't know, like, it's the rookies. It's the guys they drafted.
That's it.
It's all the free agents that they signed that probably aren't going to make the team. Everyone,
Herm,
you know,
used to call it the gong show. Remember that? Herm called it the gong show. We got all these guys out here, you know, because you may find someone in the gong show. There's the draft picks and everyone who, like the guys when my wife and daughter watch The Bachelor, they'll say, this guy played in the NFL. No, he went to a rookie minicamp is what he did. He didn't actually play.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, they're not the greatest receivers either.
Yeah, so he... I can't remember who it was, but like right as we were walking in, Mahomes threw just a god-awful interception to an undrafted rookie defensive back from Oklahoma State, who I know he didn't stick with the Chiefs. He might have ended up somewhere else, but I remember because they give you the little roster, who all these guys are and where they went to school, and you're looking down like, well, who picked him off? Maybe this guy's really good. And like, no, undrafted kid from Oklahoma State I never heard of. Okay. And he threw like two or three more. He threw a lot of wounded ducks in the practice, and it was ugly. And I came on the air next day, and I pretty much said what I saw. And then I talked to somebody with the Chiefs who was like, "Look, Andy Reid is trying to make him struggle right now. He's putting him in a lot of bad positions. He's throwing a ton at him." And he's letting him use some of his bad habits and mechanics right now because he wants them to fail on him and so that he can correct them. And obviously that all sounds great now, right? But at the time, you're kind of like, all right, they just traded up to get this guy in the first round. And not everybody, I mean, it's easy to look at it now and look at, oh, this guy, MVP, we all saw it coming. This guy's great. You know, but at the time, people were upset they didn't take Deshaun Watson. They had traded up to get this guy. We were all happy here in town because he drafted a quarterback in the first round. But, you know, when I heard that, I was like, okay, is that the kind of stuff you say when you're trying to justify how bad your quarterback that you just drafted looks? Oh, no, we want him to look bad. We're trying to throw a lot at him, all this stuff. You know, but that's what I was told. And then
I think I even remember a conversation like, you know what? I might be all right with sitting this guy behind Alex Smith for two seasons.
I don't know if I said that or not. Maybe I did.
My head almost exploded. I said, you don't trade up to draft a guy and then sit him for 2 years. And then
they did with Aaron Rodgers.
I know. Yeah. we didn't
trade up to get Aaron Rodgers either. He fell to him. But we'll never know the answer to this. We'll never know. But you can't prove to me that the way they did it was wrong. I think sitting him behind Alex Smith
Perfect.
Was the best thing for Patrick Mahomes.
And
the fact that
you can't criticize
that they
anything.
Were able to have their spot solidified, and they were able to give him a start and have a whole week, you know, at the end of the year to play. It was great too. I mean, it worked out perfectly. I see so many guys who go out there and they struggle early, and you know, then it maybe sets them back a little bit, and it's hard. Look at all these first round draft picks the last 10 years who get out there and play, and it's just rough for them. And then you don't know if their career would have been different if they had some success and felt better.
Hey,
you know,
Tua's already been benched, kind of, whatever that is that's going on in Miami. If maybe he's a little banged up, maybe he's benched. Joe Burrow's out for the year.
That's disappointing because he was really coming into his own.
Yeah, but he was also getting hit like 20 times a game.
Clearly.
And so, you know what? Not only did they do all that, they went out and had Alex Smith post his best year ever as a pro, and they got something for him. You know, they were able to trade him and get something that helped them win the Super Bowl.
Kendall Fuller.
Yeah, I mean, he had an interception in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, so it worked out in many ways. And the thing is, the other thing you can't prove is, what would Patrick Mahomes be if he had been drafted by the Jets?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he's got the best life that Derek could have, where he got picked, right where he got picked.
Maybe he'd still be like this great quarterback that we'd all be watching and going, man, can you believe this guy dragged the Jets up? Because he is obviously amazingly talented and has all the capacity in the world to learn and study, and he's got all the physical ability to do everything you need to do on a football field, make every single throw, run the ball, all that stuff. But man, when you hear Tyreek Hill say that and talk about how much he improved in terms of his mechanics and his decision making,
I thought it was trash. I ain't gonna.
I mean, you know, to hear him say that, it does make you feel like, yeah, they've coached him up too. Like they helped, because I saw a guy that did not look like a good NFL quarterback on that first day. And obviously the tools were all there. He just had to be coached. And the way they coached him, he is now the best quarterback in the NFL. Pretty interesting stuff. We'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. We've got a couple little technical glitches here. So we're back early on radio. We'll rejoin TV here in a moment.
I'm real happy right now. That's Todd Lebo. Great day, woo!
He wishes he was just back to lip reading and rip leading right
Great
now.
Great day, woo!
Yeah, he's got some things to sort out on the computers over there. Computers make our lives easier, right, Todd?
I was just trying to play a simple gong noise, and it completely crashed the whole system. When you're talking about Herm.
Corrupted cart,
the whole system, and now I'm already in the 7 o'clock hour, which means nothing to the viewer or listener, but know that I'm screwed.
Yeah, that's what you get for playing the gong.
I shouldn't have said gong show.
Yep. Great
fault.
Day.
Look what you did, Todd.
Hey, here's the deal. Don't be cute on TV. No more drops.
Tell you what.
How about the system just didn't crash, maybe?
Maybe.
This is 2020, so everything is about adjusting on the fly and making things up as you go. And so speaking of that, how about yesterday? The Ravens have arrived in Pittsburgh, and Wednesday's game is still on. But Baltimore had two more positive COVID-19 tests before departing on Tuesday, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter. Sources told ESPN the positive test belonged to Ravens safety Geno Stone, a rookie seventh-round pick who has played in two games this season, and an equipment manager. The results are not unexpected and not a concern for the game, a source told Schefter. The two positive tests were deemed no risk to others because, a source told ESPN's Dan Graziano, the Ravens operated the last few days acting as though everyone is positive. Walkthrough workouts were masked, distanced, and outdoors to reduce risk, basically eliminating close contacts. So, the Ravens have had 10 straight days of positive tests as they prepare for the Steelers. Now, the question I have is,
the staffer, but it is something, yes.
Yeah, and well, one player and one staffer, but what about everyone flying to Pittsburgh? I don't know. I mean, maybe they're able to.
Well, they're not going to fly the guys who are positive. They're not going.
Right.
So I would think in a big charter flight, they're flying like, I don't know. Gosh, they're gonna leave 17, 18, 20 people home. They have so many guys on the COVID list. It'd be like those old days on Vanguard Airlines. flying up. You know, there's you know, we got 40 people on a flight that'll hold 150. Hell, they may all have their own row. Who knows? They may have two planes too. Hell, I don't know.
The last line of this article says this is the biggest outbreak in professional sports. Oh, I'm sorry, one of the biggest outbreaks in professional sports. I don't know how they rank them. Right now, they're saying 16 players will be on or are on the COVID list, but two can come off today when the two running backs, Dobbins and Ingram, theoretically come off the list. And
yeah, they probably took them, but if yeah. someone can't play and is positive, they're not taking them on the plane.
Well, they couldn't. What I read yesterday was they could not take Dobbins and Ingram because they are still on the list, so they have to fly themselves today. Yeah, they couldn't fly till today. So,
right.
But my only point is, like, if you keep getting positive tests every single day, then what are the odds that the guys that are all on the plane that nobody else is going to test positive today? So hopefully they don't. It does. I mean, maybe they're able to do it where they can fly safely. I know they've got new filtration systems in planes and all that. Maybe they've got that on this plane that keeps you from circulating too much of the air. And like you said, maybe because there's 16 guys not going, that maybe there's space. But the NFL is doing whatever they can to get this game in, Todd.
It's important. So, I mean, yeah. The Steelers are it's part of the Chiefs. I mean, you know, if you're the Chiefs, you don't want the Steelers to go 15-0, and you know, you don't get a chance to.
And then you go 15-1.
Yeah, and you don't get a chance to be the one seed. The Ravens are trying to make the postseason. You know, it's been a rough go for them lately. Obviously, with all the stuff happening off the field as well. But they need to play their games. The NFL wants the integrity of everyone playing 16 games. And they're obviously doing a lot of stuff to do that, because this game was Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday now. And now they've moved their game that was supposed to be this Thursday to next Tuesday, correct? So they've already moved that one, and there's going to be a doubleheader at this point on Monday. You know, we kind of went through this, what was that, week 4 or 5, when the Chiefs got moved around because everything that happened with the Titans, and they're dealing with it again. I'm just super proud of the way the Chiefs have handled everything.
Yeah,
they've done a nice job, and they've had positive tests in their building, and it hasn't turned into an outbreak.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, the two games on Monday next week, Washington versus Pittsburgh and the Bills versus the 49ers. Then on Tuesday, it's supposed to be the Cowboys versus the Ravens. We'll see. We'll see where it goes from here. We can take a break. We're going to take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 Spot. The Border Patrol continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB and on 38 The Spot. As the Kansas Jayhawks got a 65-62 win over the Kentucky Wildcats in college basketball, but we've also got college football still underway. And Todd Lebo, we're going to finally get that rivalry game between Missouri and Arkansas.
Yeah, it's obviously everything, as we've mentioned a bunch, has been changed because of scheduling. This game was supposed to happen last weekend. It was supposed to happen in Kansas City last weekend. And they changed that, obviously, during when everything got crazy with the pandemic. And then it got moved because of Arkansas had too many positive tests. So then they said, hey, Missouri, you play Vandy. They did that. And now they're going to play this Arkansas game. And as of right now, you know, they're going to do senior day stuff down there at Mizzou, even though they have another game theoretically against Georgia coming up, but they're like, we don't know if it's going to happen, so let's go ahead and do senior day, right? And they're supposed to still play Mississippi State. They could have two more games after this for the Tigers, but right now what they know is they're going to play. Good news, Eli Drinkwitz was like, hey, we got 61 guys that can play this week. That doesn't seem like much, but wow, that was pretty cool. Felt pretty good about it. And so this is a big kind of rivalry game. Now, this isn't some 100-year rivalry because these guys weren't in the same league, but they're trying to make it a rivalry. If they have this big trophy called Battle Lines, and Missouri's done very well in this game. They ended up getting Brett Bielema fired on the field, right? Isn't that what happened? 4 years ago, they got him fired on the field because they beat him, and Jeff Long was fired the week before that, I guess. So this is a big game. It's a fun game. And Eli Drinkwitz says rivalries are what, no matter what level, what sports are all about.
It's what makes the game fun. You know, whether or not your records are where they want to be, but being able to have some bragging rights over some people and that's what makes the game, the competition, the spirit of it fun. That's what college football is all about. I mean, you know, you asked me what the biggest game I've ever coached or played in. I'm going to tell you Alma Greenwood all day long. You know, I mean, 12,000 people. It was something serious growing up and playing and coaching in that. And, And that's what college football is about, you know. And I know we have our rivalry to that other school, whatever direction that is from here, but the Jay somethings. And, you know, but, you know, they're not in the conference, and I don't know when we're going to get to play them again. But so we got to have another one. And so we just picked a team with the AR in front of it. And, you know, we're going to try to do the best we can. It's relatively young, but, you know, I'm sure we'll figure out a way to continue to make it more and more appealing each year. And, I mean, this year doesn't lack any storylines, that's for sure.
So you got a little Jay-somethings, a little put an AR in front of Kansas. I like that from Eli Drinkwitz. And there are storylines, guys, because who's the defensive coordinator for Arkansas?
Barry Odom.
B.O. So Barry Odom was the head coach at Missouri, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means that, I mean, even though there's only 61 guys who can play, a lot of these guys came to Missouri to play for Barry Odom, right? I know you're supposed to pick the school because of the school, but in the end, we know that the head coach is a big part of what you're doing. And now they're going to be, especially a lot of the defensive guys, you know, because, you know, defensive head coach and all that stuff, they're going to be out there and look across, and their old coach will be calling the signals on the other side. So Eli Drinkwitz says that's not lost on him either, that you can't avoid the fact that Barry Odom was at Missouri and now he's at Arkansas.
There's no hiding it. You know, we talked about it on Sunday that, you know, there's obviously we're going against Coach Odom and a couple other coaches that used to be here. But again, this is a player's game. And when the kickoff starts, it's going to be about the men on that field and the jobs they do. And no different than any of us. We've gone against people we care about, you know, and have feelings for. But at the end of the day, when you're playing a game, it's about the people in that locker room and the Mizzou on your chest and what we're trying to do as our team. In the seniors here, and so we're trying to win. So it'll once it kicks, all that stuff goes out the window.
You know, Eli Drinkwitz is from Arkansas, and that's where he grew up. He mentioned the Alma Greenwood rivalry in high school. Those are both kind of suburbs of Fort Smith, Arkansas. That must be a big deal for him. He's an Alma guy, I guess, and that's not very far from Fayetteville. So he grew up going to games at Arkansas, and I'm sure if you were going to ask him, like, your dream job or whatever like that, probably Arkansas. I mean, that's kind of where he's from. Now, if it's not like some NFL job or, you know, some big Alabama or whatever, something like that, I mean, that's where he's from. He went to games there when he was a kid. That was a big deal. So there's a lot on the line here. This should be pretty interesting with the coaching things on both sides and the fact that they're finally getting to play. And they are trying to create this. Now, nothing's permanent, right? We thought the Missouri was going to be in the Big 8, Big 12 forever, and they're in the SEC. Maybe the SEC will break up and something else will happen. But I like the fact that they made this a rivalry instead of trying to, you know, they were playing A&M on Thanksgiving weekend. Well, they used to play A&M all the time, and they weren't even really rivals. So I like the fact that they gave them this rivalry because they do share a border, and a lot of people from around here go to school down there, and it's pretty cool.
So do you think Missouri fans care that much about this game? I mean, more than any other game? Like, because it seemed pretty clear to me with that first answer with the little jabs at Kansas and stuff that even Eli Drinkwitz is brand new there, and he already knows that Missouri fans care way more about Kansas than they do Arkansas.
Yeah, I think my Missouri fans who I'm friends with, they're trying to make this be the game. You know, they are.
They're looking for something.
They are, and because there really are a lot of people in Kansas City area whose kids go to Arkansas. Not just to play, you know, football or anything, but that's just where they go to school. So that makes it fun. They've all been down there, and then maybe they grew up and they like Missouri, and now their kids are Arkansas people. So, but yeah, you have to create it. I mean, because they took the other one away. You know, when the league broke up, I mean, it's gone. So you have to create something. I think they have a better chance of making this a rivalry than anything else in the SEC.
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, look, rivalries happen organically. They're not created. Look, soccer siren, but Sporting Kansas City, they've tried to create rivalries. They tried to have a big rivalry with Chicago, and nobody cared. Now it's, you know, Minnesota and Sporting Kansas City. They call it the nicest rivalry in sports. But what it takes is it takes a lot of games against each other.
That's Houston and Salt Lake City.
Those are the teams that sporting fans have always hated.
Yeah.
And it happens because of big games and big moments characters that you hate.
Because they couldn't get past Houston in the playoffs for like three straight years.
Right. So now maybe, like, you know, this Minnesota sporting thing becomes something because they play each other enough, but you can't force it. You can't create history.
You can't create history.
Yeah, you're right. And there was so much history between Kansas and Missouri before the schools even got involved, you know, with just the...
Yeah, and if Arkansas and Missouri end up playing each other every Thanksgiving for 20 years, and neither one of them is probably going to... I mean, maybe there'll be a game to go to the SEC title game or something at some point. But you know, if those things happen, it'll get bigger. But the fact that they are right next to each other and there's a lot of people who either in their families have gone to either school, both schools or whatever, that's a chance to have a little bit more of a rivalry. And, you know, you can't, it's hard to create traditions, but you have to start somewhere. They're doing some things down there now. Coach Drinkwitz brought a thing in where they light up the columns if they win. They want the, you know, that area of the campus to be a place people go kind of hang out after games if they win. I mean, but you have to try things.
Yep.
You know, if you don't, nothing. Everyone just walks around and nothing happens.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
I appreciate the effort to try to make it something.
Well, they got
to
try something. But what it's going to take, too, is some good games between the two of them and some decent teams. I mean, you know, they could sit there and say, well, we haven't had a chance to play Kansas. I mean, it'd be fun for Missouri to play Kansas right now because they beat them by 30. You know, but that doesn't – what made – the Kansas-Missouri thing fun was when both the random times that both teams were good, because that didn't happen very many times in my life.
Yeah, it was
both
about
teams
five
good
really
at the same
important,
time. You know,
five important games out of 100 years. I don't know.
But they were like in basketball, it was really fun because during the Norm Stewart era, Missouri was always pretty much good, and KU was pretty much always good, and that made it fun. That's what makes the rivalry more than anything, is having the games mean something and have the games be big. So if Missouri and Arkansas can both be good for a while in football, and then play some good games against each other, you got yourself a rivalry on your hands because there is enough proximity.
I'll say this.
You know,
Arkansas is as much improved as about anybody in the SEC.
Yep.
They are a much better team than they were the last couple of years. Sam Pittman's done a nice job down there.
And the defense has been better. You got to give some credit to Barry Odom there, too. So we'll take a break back after this to wrap things up on television right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, this is a turnaround.
All right, that's going to do it for our hour on 38 The Spot. Thank you, Todd Lebo, for joining us for the first hour of the show. Stephen St. John's going to join us next. Adam Kaplan at 7:30. Gary Lezak after that with a weather forecast. Matt Beasler at 8 o'clock. Greg Gurley at 8:30. Nick Leckie at 9 o'clock. More Stephen St. John sprinkled in. You like a little Stephen St. John sprinkled in through the course of the show today. Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll see you tomorrow morning on 38 The Spot.